Yo?
Is that mine?
Yeah. That's the problem. I cannot raise my hand.
Yes, sir.
I want them to mute now because I want to start the meeting.
Yes, sir. They can mute. You can start, sir. We are fine. Yeah.
Please, colleagues, please mute. You'll only unmute when you talk. Okay.
Chairperson, do you get my voice?
I hear you very well.
Okay, let me mute then.
Okay, the mute members. Good morning, honorable members, members of the media, ladies and gentlemen, and the staff present today, the meeting of the Standing Committee on Appropriations. Today we are having a briefing by the Public Service Commission on the Appropriation Bill. So you are all welcome. We are meeting under very difficult conditions. Coronavirus is with us, hence we are having virtual meetings. But thank you very much for making it to the meeting. This was my opening. Darren?
Chairperson?
Do you have any apologies?
No apologies, Chairperson.
Okay, I just want to honor members to show their faces. You just want to let me start. I see there's Honorable Zembo. Honorable Zembo, can you just greet us?
Yes, good morning, Chairperson. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Honorable Kaiso.
Morning, Chair.
Are you there? We don't see you. Just continue talking.
Morning, sir. Do you see me?
Continue talking. Continue talking. We don't see you.
Yes. Good morning, Chair. How are you?
We are fine, thank you. Yeah. There you are. Yes. Honorable sisters.
Good morning, Chairperson and members.
Yeah. Thank you. We see you. Good morning. Honorable Matapa. We saw Honorable Dihale.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Honorable Kumane, are you there?
Good morning, Chair. Sheikh Imam is here.
Honorable Sheikh, welcome. Good morning.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Kumane, are you there? Honorable Tlangwini. Darren?
Chairperson, Honorable Tlangwini is not in the meeting.
Not in the meeting yet, sir.
No, sir.
Honorable Kumane?
Chairperson, Honorable Tlangwini is not in the meeting.
Honorable Joseph? Please, honorable members, mute your videos.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, all.
Hi, honorable Joseph, how are you? Honorable Joseph, continue speaking. I want to see your face.
Yeah, can you see?
Not yet. I can see you are there, but I don't see your face. Okay, that's fine. Thank you. Good morning. I see you now. Honorable Sadupen.
Morning, Chair. Can you see me?
Continue cooking.
Can you get me? I'm coming up on the screen.
Yeah, I can see you. Any other question?
See if this is working. My video is definitely on, Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Did you see my video, Chair? Good morning. It's Honorable Matapa.
Honorable Matapa, good morning. We see you.
Thank you, Chair.
Darren?
Chairperson?
Any other honorable member that you have left out?
No, Chairperson.
you let me know as they join the meeting, eh?
I will do that, Chair.
Are we correcting committee secretary?
Yes, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you. So we can continue with the meeting.
Yes, Chairperson.
Yeah. Let me welcome Public Service Commission. They are going to be making a presentation about the appropriation bill. They introduce themselves and start with the presentation. I've requested that their presentation should be 40 minutes maximum. That will allow honorable members to interact with the presentation and also allow them to respond to the issues that would have been raised by the honorable members. Can I, at this stage, just say to the Public Service Commission, immediately they finish with their presentation, please take it off from the screen. Don't forget that it's just one of the housekeeping rules. Public Service Commission, please come in, introduce yourselves, and introduce your team, whoever is leading the team. It will be very important for us to see them. As I said, I welcome members of the media and members of the public who may be there, just to remind everybody that the meeting is for the committee members. They are observers in this meeting. Public Service Commission.
Honorable Chair, my name is Phumelele Nzimande and I'm a commissioner. I'm just stepping in for Dr. Lebalo, my colleague, who is the chair of the committee that supports your good committee, honorable members and chair, in this stream of work. He experienced a bit of technical glitches. He may be joining us in the process of the presentation. With me, I have DDG Irene Makendra, whom you met last year, who assisted in Dr. Lebalo in the presentation. She, Irene, please. Yes, Chair.
Commissioner Nzimande, good morning and welcome. Is your video on?
My video is on, Chair. My camera is on.
Is your camera on?
Can you see me? Yes.
Anguboni, yeah. Try. Let's see. Keep on talking.
Since when did technology discriminate now on the basis of age? Why is it? Darren saw me when my camera is on. I don't know what's going on.
Okay.
Can you not see me?
Technical team, can you please assist Commissioner Nzimande? But you can continue talking.
I usually see myself as a very technical savvy Magriza. I don't know what's going on. But just not to spend, to waste your time, Chair, while we're fixing the visuals. Do you mind if I continue anyway introducing my team?
Please
just take time. Yeah.
Please
okay. With me, as I said, it's with DDG Irene Matendra. Irene, please try and show yourself while I sort out my story. And Chief Director Carmen Domingo, who also is the committee may be familiar with, was part of the team last year. And Commissioner Dr. Lebalo may join us as I said.
Thank you very much. You are welcome. DDG and Chief Director, please speak so that we can see you.
Okay. Just before I let the DDG speak, Chairperson, just a few opening remarks. On our side, we last met.
Commissioner, I just wanted them to show their face.
DDG and Carmen, please show your faces.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning, Commissioner and Honorable Members. We are here.
Good morning. Welcome, Carmen. Thank you.
Carmen, show your faces.
CDG.
Amen.
CDG Matenjwa.
She's the one with spectacles on, Chair.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, they both have spectacles. There's coming.
Yes. Good morning, honorable members and Chair. I'm Carmen.
Welcome, Chief Director. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioner Demand, you may continue.
Okay. Chairperson, we last met with your good committee in November 2019. And of course, today we are engaging under very different circumstances as the whole world and our country is facing COVID-19 pandemic, as you alluded to your introductory remark. We are mindful that we are making this input based on the 2020 Appropriation Bill as is, and we are alive to the fact that even the Minister of Finance and the National Treasury have indicated that they will have to revisit the budget. But we believe that some of the principles that are going to be embedded in the presentation will still highlight issues that should still guide the committee, even in the context of the new budget. With all the challenges that COVID-19 brought, the PSC has observed some lessons about the agility of government and of public administration as a whole, including even meeting like this. If we had said, Chair, last year when we got the invitation from the committee, no, Chair, we will not come before your good committee, please let's connect virtually, you would have possibly thought we are disrespecting you. But guess what? A few months later, this is the new norm. So it does seem that there has been a great deal of agility arising out of this lesson. And therefore, also, we are hoping that the similar agility will also prevail in the efficiency and the effectiveness of service delivery now during the pandemic and beyond. We believe, Chair, that some of the issues that we're going to raise perhaps are better referred or led to other committees. We will leave that to the wisdom of the committee to consider as to which one of the issues we will raise will be better maybe dealt with in collaboration with other committees. Be that as it may, we would have given the committee the budget cost to make it possible for that to happen when you do your joint oversight. With just those introductory words which Commissioner Dubalo would have made, I would like then to hand over to DDG Matenjwa to take you through the presentation. And just to say, we really appreciate this relationship between the committee and the Public Service Commission, because it also makes us fulfill our responsibility to support Parliament in its oversight. Thank you, Chair. DDG, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Commissioner and Mande, for those opening remarks.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think we can now go through the presentation. It's already being flagged on the screen. I think it's been shown there. I hope everybody is seeing it.
Yes, we do.
Okay, so we can continue with the presentation for now. Honorable Chair, our presentation contains the introduction, PSC area of oversight, general comments on the appropriation bill, strategies to significantly improve management practices in the public service, opportunities for efficiency, effectiveness, and value for money, as well as other issues of governance across the public service, and then we will conclude the presentation. Honorable Chair, if you allow me, I'm going to run a little bit quickly on these two following slides, which is about the introduction of the Public Service Commission. We did introduce ourselves last time when we met with the committee, just to indicate that the Public Service Commission is a constitutional body and its reporting mechanisms and how it's structured. So I'm going to go past that slide. Going to the next slide as well, I think perhaps what is critical is just to reiterate the constitutional oversight mandate of the PSC, which is really around the organization of the public service, the administration, issues of personnel procedures and practices, public administration practices. We look into adherence to applicable procedures in the public service, but also very important is the issue of the constitutional values and principle and the extent to which these principles and values are adhered to by the public service. As we move on to the next slide, as I spoke about the constitutional values and principles, we're just highlighting those principles. You see a couple of bubbles there. The ones in red or maroon are the principles in Section 195 of the Constitution, and the one in dark green are the founding values in our Constitution. This slide is very important to us because it's the bedrock really of the work of the Public Service Commission. The principles are supposed to guide the public service, but largely the public administration as a whole in the manner in which we do our work in government. Chairperson, this principle alludes to issues of development, orientation of public administration so that we can be able to achieve the NDP targets. They talk to issues of efficiency, effective and economic use of resources in the whole of government. It talks to issues of high standard of professional ethics, which must be maintained in the manner in which we do our work. And for that, really, we are working towards restoring the human dignity, the equality of our people, freedoms, and all of those issues that we lost prior to our democracy. Whilst we're on this slide, Chairperson, I would like to request that you allow me to just lift perhaps two, three issues that we have been reiterating every time that we met with the committee, including last time when we met with the committee when we present to SCOA. One of them, and these issues, I must say, they've been really heightened by the COVID-19. The first issue is the issue of the capacity of the state. This is very important if we are really to achieve the priority one of government, which is about capable, ethical, and developmental state. The COVID-19 has really asked of us whether we are capable to deliver the services to our people, but also the organizational as well as the technical capacity, the capacity to deliver in a crisis whilst we keep firmly on the medium and long-term objectives of government. Very important there. And we will touch on those as we go along to the presentation. But these are the issues that we have at every occasion that we have been given by the committee to say, let's pay attention to these issues. The second issue is the issue of procurement within the public service and largely public administration. But now, this issue can be seen from two angles. Procurement from SCM can be a risk area for wastage and leakage. We need to pay attention to that so that we don't lose state resources. But also what we're saying is that procurement must also be used as a lever to really support our small business, particularly in this time of COVID, where we are also procuring and we are needing certain suppliers that could help us to cope as government, but also our citizens during this time of COVID. We need to make sure that every cent is committed to the localization and the set aside, also to relieve government from the funding that we have made available, which is supposed to help our society out there. The third one is the issue of the fourth industrial revolution. ICT enhancements are very critical in this point in time. We need to have the infrastructure, but this has got huge implications for our budget as well. So I thought I should just raise those issues because these are the issues that we have been saying to the committee and to other stakeholders that we've been meeting with the as the Public Service Commission. But now they've been really heightened amidst the COVID-19. Chairperson, as we move on to slide number 6, we're talking about the general comments on the appropriation bill. As Public Service Commission, I think we appreciate the stimulus injection onto the coronavirus so that we can respond appropriately, which shows that government really cares about its citizens. But what we are saying again is that we need to ensure a balance between being responsive to the needs of the citizens with accountability and transparency, and we should not make use of the COVID-19 to loot state resources, especially when procurement is fast-tracked. We need to maintain that high standard of professional ethics and integrity. Now, the prioritization of funds to respond to the pandemic will obviously require amendments to the appropriation bill, the budget, but this will also translate into amendments into the medium-term strategic framework, the medium-term expenditure framework, and obviously annual performance plans. But what we want to also emphasize to the committee is that any amendment that is being made, there is a need to take a risk-based approach to deal with such amendments. Therefore, whatever that we present into the committee for amendments, we need to be able to demonstrate to the committee what are the risks associated with those changes that we are making and what are the mitigation plans to deal with those risks. This reprioritization will also mean further expenditure cuts, and therefore it is vital that new and innovative working arrangements are developed to minimize the inevitable negative impact of these cuts on performance and service delivery. As we move on to the next slide, Chairperson, we are looking into the implications of the budget cuts. And one of the things that we are saying is that we know that the obvious target in most instances when we cut is normally the headcount. So we might see a little bit of shrinking of headcounts, but we are saying that we should not ignore the value chain in the delivery of the services when we cut some of when we make some of these cuts, particularly around staff in the public service. Now, just to make an example, previously when we did the cuts in government, we're saying administration and those kind of services might not be as critical as the core services. If I were to make that example in the education sector, things like cleaners in the schools and so on, we thought maybe this is not so critical, we can cut and leave one cleaner and so on. But if we look at the COVID now, it actually calls for those kind of services to be deployed back, because we want much cleaner environment when kids go back to school, cleaner toilets, cleaner classrooms, and those kind of things. So we need to be careful as we do that so that we don't cut the very same value chain that supports the delivery of the service, and we find ourselves in much deeper trouble. Chairperson, as we move on, what we're saying is that the massive work programs such as the EPWP should focus on supporting social welfare and healthcare functions and preventative measures, from cleaning schools as well, parks and playgrounds, equipment to disinfect bus taxi ranks and taxis. This lays the foundation for job guarantee scheme. As we move on to the next slide with the general comments, Chairperson, the COVID-19 has created an opportunity for a serious reflection. And I think this reflection is taking place at all levels. And what it has told us is that failure to deliver on government policies has disadvantaged future generations and inflicted disproportionate pain to the poorest of the poor. And a case in point here is the policy of digital migration for South Africa that was approved by Cabinet in 2010. We have been forced by the COVID, like it or not, to find ourselves in a situation where we are using ICT, whether we are ready or not. And I think an example is what we are going through today with the committee, where we are presenting online because the circumstances really do not allow for us to be meeting face to face. Therefore, online service delivery channels must be increased and enhanced. And for this purpose, departments must ensure that their readiness to capacitate employees to deliver the services with efficiency. But we also need to make sure that we don't leave behind our citizens as we move with the technology, so that they are empowered in every way possible, so that we are able to interact with them and empower them for the delivery of services. Therefore, strengthen digital infrastructure and accelerating rollout of usage of technology through broadband should be a key national and continental priority for all sectors. Chairperson, we move on now to slide number 9 around the strategies to significantly improve management practices in the public service. What we are really saying around this slide is that we need to have plans that present the cost, benefit, and trade-offs between different service delivery options and models. However, often departments often do not have the ability to cost different service delivery options to consider cost against benefits and service delivery implications. I think the example here is what we have seen recently with the distribution of food parcel, where we're supposed to go all out and have people queuing for the food parcels. Was it efficient? Was it the value for money? Could we have opted perhaps for an online service where vouchers were given to people so that they can procure the food? So those are the kind of options that we need to present before we deliver services, and look particularly in light of COVID, what would be the best under the circumstances, and what would save government money if we were to opt for those scenarios. And our plans should include financial modeling as well as alternative strategies that should be costed. So for the Public Service Commission, we are saying this is the time where we have been talking about the importance of planning and budgeting, but also looking into other models that are available so that we can deploy those when we do our budgets and our plans, so that we can deliver best under the circumstances. There is also a need to fast track the district delivery model, the DDM implementation, which provides for a focused and coordinated intergovernmental attention to the district. I think we are realizing now that actually with the COVID, the citizen is really on the ground. It's not at national or at provincial. It's really on the ground. And therefore, this is where the services are mostly needed. It is important that our planning and financial modeling capability are really checked up, as mostly these are absent in our public service today. On slide 10, Chairperson, we talk about the issue of disempowerment to manage. Basically, what we're saying here is that we also need to strengthen the level of delegation to where performance levels are, to make sure that those that are at district, those that are at local level, those that are at district, as I said, at local level, they have got the delegated powers to make the decision and to make those decisions as quick as possible. Now, we know that the public service runs on a standardized routines, which means we have got policies and procedures regulating all administrative activities. If these are implemented diligently, a level of stability and discipline is attained. However, if we relax this thing again, we see that things can deteriorate quickly. But a worrying factor, again, is the inability of departments' internal controls and monitoring systems to timely pick up service delivery concerns. Managers, what we find as Public Service Commission through our work, we find that managers at various levels, they feel that they have a lack of agency, or do not act on the agency that they have. So often they have to wait for decisions to be made elsewhere. They feel that they do not have the power to put all operational requirements in place to ensure that a service runs smoothly, especially when citizens require those services that are not really prescribed, or that are not prescribed through the policies and so on. To think really out of the box and to provide those services, it becomes a little bit challenging for the public service. And one way to address this lack of agency, we say, is to review the management structures of the public service, which would require better alignment to responsibility, authority, and accountability. Chairperson, as we move on to the opportunities for efficiency, effectiveness and value for money, we know that one of the key things on this issue is the wage bill. Maybe before I even go into what the point that we are reiterating on the slide, I just need to mention that the public service is labor intensive, and therefore you find that the bulk of the budget really goes to compensation of the employees, as we have got nurses, we've got teachers, we've got police and so on. So what this means actually is that the remaining budget then goes to goods and services. Those are the things that we procure to do the work. Now, part of this budget that goes to the goods and services is already dedicated to mandatory costs such as accommodation, ICT infrastructure, auditing fees, and so on. So in a way, it actually now leaves small portion for goods and services. Although some of the goods and services do not necessarily need to be procured. So if a teacher is in class and teaching, actually they are providing a service. So we have paid for that service in one way or the other through the cost of employment. Now, we know that with the COVID, we already have a month and a couple of weeks not being fully operational as government. We take cognizance of the fact that there will be a little bit of saving that will be made, particularly if you look at things like traveling and so on that are not taking place at the moment. However, this will not be sufficient to really cover the massive COVID-19 injection into those needs. The other thing, again, which is very critical that we're observing as the Public Service Commission is that with the aging public service, we have got officials who have been in the system prior 1994 who are now steadily retiring and leaving the public service at a huge cost. And when I say the huge cost, I mean specifically the issue of kept leave. So prior 2000, officials could accumulate their leave over and over, so officials could sit with like 100 or 200 days of leave and so on, up until a determination was made to say leave days should be taken on each cycle up until the end of June. If you don't take those leaves, then they get depleted or you lose them. So those that joined the service before that directive was made are now retiring with huge amounts that have to be paid for that leave, and that money obviously has to be paid. But the issue, again, going back to the slide that we're emphasizing here, is that when we're approaching the issue of the wage bill, we also need to look into the excessive salaries of those in the local government and public entities, especially those executives as well as board members. And we are excited about the developments that are in place to really pay attention to that area of work. On performance rewards, we know that year in, year out, public servants get assessed for their performance. But what we are really saying as Public Service Commission is that we need to have a consideration to negotiate for non-payment of performance bonuses for this financial year, as our economy is in serious constraints. And therefore, we also need to put in place strategies to manage the PMDS, the Performance Management and Development System, and the possible grievances by public servants that might come as a result of this move. Chairperson, there's an issue that really also worries the Public Service Commission, the cost of doing business. We need to look for each and every sector in government and in all departments. We need to really review the cost of doing business, as this is also putting a strain on our economy, particularly with the as exacerbated by the COVID-19. In particular, if we were to make an example, we have got what we call public service health risk assessors. These are private companies that are contracted, if I can use that word, by government to make an assessment if an official in the public service is on extended sick leave, whether they should go on retirement or they should go on medical boarding. So they will make those assessments and so on. So there is a certain percentage of money that government pays towards these risk assessors on a continuous basis. Therefore, we are saying that if we are a government that also has a public health care, we have got tertiary hospitals where we have got experts that could actually assist government in terms of making those assessments. In this point in time, is it really necessary to have external people helping us with that, whereas we should be making use of our external, our internal resources? Chairperson, as we move with the slide again, 12, the use of consultants. I think at this point in time, we will not be able to afford the use of consultants, particularly where such capacity exists in departments. I think one of the examples that we made previously when we met with the committee was the issue of legal services, where you have got a legal advisor in the department, but when it comes to legal matters, again, we still go out and seek and make use of consultants at exorbitant fees. The issue of litigation, we really have to be careful about this. There's a need to enhance public sector values and culture as a preventative measure and not to contravene our constitutional values and principles. I think an example that we have seen recently is a gentleman that have died, I think in the heads of our colleagues at the SNDF. I'm speaking under correction here, and already we have seen that some litigation has already commenced from that side. So as we are doing our work, as we are guiding our people in the manner in which we're supposed to behave during this period in time, we also need to be more careful not to leave opportunities for such litigation. I think in the Northwest as well, we have seen a situation where a police van has hit two people and those kind of things. So I think it's very important that in the manner in which we do our work as government, we really need to be more careful, because these litigations tends to be very, very costly to government. We are also making a point there around gainful employment, as we are within the COVID, that public servants employed in non-essential services can be trained to perform other functions, for example, providing non-medical support in hospitals, assisting in soup kitchens, distributing food, and working with communities so that people are gainfully employed. And also we need to train and reassign existing employees, especially office-bound and support staff to these kind of areas, whilst those that are supposed to work from home still need to work from home, still need to be accountable, they need to show what they are doing so that they earn their money rightfully. We also take cognizance of the one third percent of the people that are supposed to be in the office. I will talk more about that when I get to the slide. Chairperson, I'm on slide 13 now. On slide 13, we are just highlighting a couple of the governance issues. I need to indicate that we do not have new data at the moment. When we do the MTBPS later on, we'll be able to give a full view of these issues that we are talking about. So we might be highlighting slides that we have talked to previously with the committee, but we are taking a bit of a different slant. On slide 14, on high standard of professional ethics, we did show how we are doing with the financial disclosures in government. The data that we have for now is up until 18-19. By the end of last month, we all officials in the public service have filed for their financial disclosure, and we'll have that data very soon and also start with scrutiny. But what we are saying in this slide really is that we shouldn't reduce compliance with high standard of professional ethics to institutional arrangements such as the conflict of interest, the ROWAPS remuneration, work outside of the public service, and anti-corruption strategies. Ethics have to go beyond this kind of thing. So we see that these issues tend to be removed from the daily experience of citizens and how they interact with us. I think the incident of law enforcement that I've made before, and how we have gone about in the food distribution, food parcels, has shown how ethics can easily be lost when we interact with citizens. And we also need to have proper feedback on behavior of officials and the impact thereof on service delivery and the citizens. On this slide, we have updated a little bit on payment of invoices. Our messaging is still pretty much the same, Chairperson, that our invoices... my apologies, it seems like I've skipped a slide. That is slide 15 on efficient and economic use of resources. Again, this slide we have shown previously. But what we are saying amidst the COVID is that those departments that actually require massive injection to assist our citizens are actually the very same departments that we have found to be not delivering in terms of their set objectives. So if you look at social development for 18-19, they only achieved 46% of their targets. has achieved 49% of their target, which was for 18-19. And obviously, the picture we'll see when we get the 2019-2020 data for that financial year. But what we are just highlighting here is that historically, if you look at 2018-19, these are the departments that were found not to be achieving their annual targets. And we're going to be paying serious attention again to these departments as they are also receiving that injection so that we can deal with the COVID crisis. On this slide, slide 16, Chairperson, on payment of invoices, our messaging is still pretty much the same. We are worried that the number of invoices is going down, but the value of the invoices is going up. As you can see that on the extreme right-hand side, we're beginning to talk billions and billions. And obviously, if you look at December, it went down a little bit. But our suspicion going to the end of the financial year, which was the end of March, is that the figures are likely to go up again as departments might have depleted their budgets. And therefore, the people who suffer in this area are the small business. And what we're saying here is that if our small business suffer, they close. They're going to be a burden on government again in terms of the grants, whereas these are the people that should be sustaining themselves through the work that they do. On slide 17, again, we're just really highlighting those departments with latest information where we have found up until December, where we have found that at national level, they haven't really paid their invoices. We would also want to reiterate to these departments to see what would be the consequence management since the president has announced the issue of financial misconduct on non-payment of invoices. And what we're saying again is that officials who are back office support should be allowed to go back into the office and now and then to process these invoices and to make sure that suppliers are paid. So there shouldn't be a supplier who is not paid because we are on COVID, the offices are closed. Within the demands of the COVID-19 security and safety and making sure that people have got all the necessary equipment and so on, what we're saying as Public Service Commission is that officials should be allowed to go back, spend some time in the office, process those invoices and make sure that they are paid. Chairperson, we have included these following slides. These are part of our mandate, as I said earlier on those bubbles around the constitutional values and principles, the issue of services that must be provided impartially, fairly, equitably, and without bias. And obviously, I think we all know that our historical special planning has largely affected development and equitable provision of services in rural areas and also those in peri-urban areas. And the challenge now is that we experiencing with the COVID is the issue of people who don't have water in the remote and rural areas. Public Service Commission has been hard at work working with the Department of Water, the Department of Water and Sanitation, as well as stakeholders at local level to make sure that water tanks are distributed so people can wash their hands and people can have water for drinking and so on. So we need to address the issue of impartiality and equitable provision of services. On slide number 19, we're also touching, I'm aware of time, Chairperson, I'll wrap up very quickly. We're touching on issues of people's needs being responded to as one of the principal and public participation, very important here. We have never experienced a challenge at the magnitude of COVID. Government is also learning as it goes on with addressing the challenge. But what we are saying as well is that we need to engage all sectors of the society, including communities at local level, because these are the people who are best positioned to tell us how best to engage with them, but also how best to deliver the services under the circumstances that we are not familiar with. On good human resources management and career development, what we're saying, Chairperson, is that we really need to change the way we manage skills data in the public service. So the issue of people having been trained and how much how many have been trained, has to change to what are the tasks that people are proficient in and what are the tasks that people are able to do. We often tick the boxes and say people have been trained, but we don't reflect on whether that training really gives us value for money at the end of the day. And I think what we're saying as well as we're going with the issue of human resources is that we need to gear up our systems to provide for managing officials that are working from home so that they are productive and they report accordingly and they give us the work that they will give so that they can begin fully employed. But we're also worried about officials that are also over 60 years that may create service delivery gap, as it has been pronounced that those are in the vulnerable for the COVID. As I move on to the concluding slide, Chairperson, post COVID-19 pressure is going to be on government to enhance its capacity to deliver public services, especially for the vulnerable in our society. And this includes mobilization of resources by the state to ensure that we enable service delivery and we learn big lessons from the COVID. And some of those we should take with us forward. And other, at the heart of this really is to embed the constitutional values and principles, as these are the foundation for effective, efficient, and economic use of resources. There's also a need to balance building a capable state and cost-cutting measures which require innovation to facilitate effective and efficient service delivery. And we also need to not lose sight of proper accounting frameworks as we deliver and respond to COVID, but also detect and present unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, wasteful expenditures and take disciplinary actions where negligence might take place at the level of the officials. Chairperson, that brings us to the end of our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Can you please then remove the slide? Thank you. And I'll request honorable to refer to the slides which were sent to us, right? I think that's what we'll do. I think that's where we end. We are now. I'll be taking the names of the oral members who would like to engage with the presentation. But while they are still preparing themselves, Secretary, Darren.
Chairperson, I'm ready with mine.
Okay, I wanted to say to Darren, you want to share with honourable members as well. We're going to take. I hear the honourable Zembo.
Thank you, ma'am.
Honourable Sheikh.
Kamatafa.
Honourable Matafa. Come again.
Honorable
Sangwini. Good morning, ma'am. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair.
Kaiso.
Okay, Honorable Kaiso. Honorable Joseph.
Please, thank you. I would like to ask a question.
Honorable Sarukin, please. Honorable Sarukin. Right. Honorable Dehali. Honorable Dehali. Thank you. Am I leaving anyone out? No. Honorable members, I wanted to allow you three questions or 3 minutes, whichever comes first. I always use my stopwatch from my side. But before I allow you to come in, Honorable Zembo, thank you so much, Commissioner Nzimande and DDG and the team for the presentation. I think it definitely does give us a picture as to what it's happening. But the comment I just want to make before I allow my the other member to come in, DDG, I think the presentation is very good in coming up with the problem statements. I think most of the things that you are raising are the things that we have been confronted with for some time. But I think, Commissioner, you are very keen on coming up with the solutions. What do we do, or what has happened about those things? I would like to park that one, because when I come in with my questions, I think my questions will be more based on that. But can you allow me to then ask Honorable Zembo to start with his questions? Honorable Zembo Mlenzana.
Thanks, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. Right to my mind, but let me start by welcoming this presentation, Chair, from PSP. Team PSP, you have done good work, and perhaps your comments about not flying to Cape Town and making presentations via virtual also shall have to note that. But Chair, let me quickly come to this one. Chair, I've noticed PSP's views, particularly on the wage bill and the use of consultants. But then, I would then have, it's two questions in one. Most commentators predicted devastating economic losses that would be worse than those during the Great Depression of 1929. Now, these two questions are, one, it's more generic. What is the view or the PSC's assessment of the situation, the current one? And if the worst case scenario occurs, what does it mean for public finances in general and the overall functioning of the state machinery? And also in the same vein, in respect of the current appropriation bill and the budgeting adjustments, the processes and all, does the PSC have any input? I heard them, they were glossing over issues. They didn't want to be that empathic. I'm pushing with DG to be empathic now. If do you have an input on which government programs and projects should be scaled down or discontinued in an effort to try to salvage the resources so that there is more economic impact, you know, on dealing with this COVID-19? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh. You still have got the minute, Honorable Zemboy. You can take it afterwards.
Thanks, Chair. I led by example.
Yeah, thank you.
I thought, Chair, the next speaker gets 3 minutes plus the 1 minute. But thank you very much for that, Chair, and thank you very much to the PSC for their presentation. But let me start off by saying, you know, I think the time has come when we should stop referring to what has happened pre-1994 and find excuses for what is happening in the country right now. Now, we very often seem to be finding excuses that we were a state that were deprived, you know, 27 years ago, the apartheid government was responsible. But remember, we've had 26 years. And the question we need to ask is, what are we doing in this 26 years to improve the quality of life? Now, National Treasury highlighted in one of the challenges that we face in order to ensure this economic growth in South Africa, and they talk about we have a capacity skill. Now, we are spending billions of rands in tertiary institutions, in private colleges. We have an unemployment rate of over 70% in the country, and we're still talking about the skills shortage. Now, the question that we need to ask is, why is that the case? Is this because there's no coordination with the skills needs in the country, together with what we are offering as part of the curriculum? So that's the first. My second concern appears to be based on now, it is common knowledge that given COVID-19, there's going to be reduced revenue, high unemployment, there's going to be a greater demand for social assistance in the country, there's going to be an increase in crime and impact on the health, justice, tax, and all the other relevant departments. Now, what are we supposed to do differently? Because clearly for the last 26 years, in the way we're conducting ourselves, and yes, indeed, we've been caught wanting right now. And I give you a good example, and I think you've alluded to the fact that even food parcels do not exist to the most vulnerable. What is the reason for that? One simple reason, that if you take a particular ward, for instance, shouldn't the municipality in which that ward was, shouldn't the public rep in that ward, shouldn't there be a database of everything to do with that particular ward? How many people live there? What are the challenges? How many unemployed people? What are their skills? All those things, so that you would have been able now to address the needs of those communities. And if we don't do that, I can tell you there's going to be a riot in the country. Now, we talk about, you know, issues that you highlighted, and correctly so, you highlighted many of the problems. One of the problems appears to be planning and the budget process. It ought to start from the bottom up, so that people, there is community participation, they know and understand what they need best in their community. But what is happening right now, the budget process is becoming a top-down approach, and we're just forcing it on the community, and that is why we're not able to deliver services to the language. I want you to give me your opinion on one very important thing. You've highlighted the challenges we have with management and leadership, particularly in structures all over the country. Shouldn't there be a separation of politics from administration? And I know you're going to say on pay basis like that. Shouldn't politicians have nothing to do with employing anybody, so you will employ people that are best able to perform those duties, and then you will not have a skills shortage? So I still have
to... No, please finish up. We are on injury time, Honorable Sheikh.
I am on injury time. Okay, thank you very much for it. Now, there's another thing that we have actually picked up very, very quickly. That is the issue of internal control measures together with the high cost of goods that we are buying at local level, particularly with the tender process. Can you tell me how far you are in discussing this matter with Treasury, who promised us a while ago that they're now going to put an open tender process, so anybody gets a job will spell out in ABC how much you pay for each item, who's the director, who got it, and market has promised to put 200 million rand on that. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh. I forgot to say at the beginning that Commissioner Nzimande is my home girl, my home sister. So if there's a declaration, you must know that. And can Honorable Matapa? Eh?
Are you going to be protecting her because she's a home girl?
Okay, Honorable Matapa, please come in.
Thank you very much. And thanks for the presentation to Commissioner Nzimande and the PSC. Chair, let me start first with the input that you've made before you allowed Hans to come in, where you are speaking about the lack of solutions as far as the presentation is concerned. Actually, there is one thing I wanted to start with, because I picked up a lot of solutions on the sidebar or on the comments as the presenter was going through the presentation. The only request I was going to make is that can't we make some of the inputs that she was making on the side as firm proposals from the PSC in terms of how government should conduct themselves, particularly on the issue of the payment to suppliers within 30 days, is one thing I wanted to rise on. She made very valuable input in terms of how this can be mitigated, because we all know that this is a process that has been long-standing, which is causing harm to emerging entrepreneurs. So it's very important that we have a commitment or a firm proposal in terms of how this payment of 30 days to suppliers can be achieved. Still on payments, Chair, the second point will be on the issue of procurement processes. And Honorable Sheikh touched a little bit on it in terms of the relaxation of procurement processes, because the disaster fund and COVID-19, to some, it might present an opportunity to loot state resources. So I'm interested to have a view of the PSC in terms of measures that government and management can put in place to ensure that funds like the Solidarity Fund and disaster management funds are protected from looting. The last one is on the issue of the New World Order. As we are working now, Honorable Zembo touched on the fact that no one has to fly to Cape Town and make a presentation. So my interest, Chair, will be to know how much impact does this working from home have, as well as government expenditure going forward? And would the PSC recommend that this becomes one of the ways that we can actually execute our mandate, oversight point, as well as from the government executive? I'll pause there, Chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you so much, Honorable Matafa. Honorable Peters.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the Public Service Commission for their presentation. Chairperson, there's something that worries me, and it's in connection to the non-payment of the small businesses or businesses. I think this is becoming like a broken record for the Public Service Commission. What is the Public Service Commission doing to make sure that those officials, be it the back office as well as senior managers and the DGs, are held accountable for non-payment? Because I would believe that it is important, not even believing, it was raised in our committee last year, that the Public Service Commission must link this to the performance evaluation and the PMPS in the public service. Because if officials know and feel with their pockets, they are going to change their approach. We cannot have situations where businesses are not paid on time, they are allowed to go under, and this non-payment is always linked to corruption. And I think it is important that this matter be put to rest. But also the recommendation of this risk, slide 11, on this risk assessors, as well as the issues related to consultants. I think that is also something that has been raised. In 2011, the then Minister of Finance actually instituted a cost-saving measure, and one of the things that was supposed to be attended to was this issue of the cost of consultants. The issue of the assessors, I think it is just proper for the Public Service Commission to impress on the Minister of Public Service that we need to use the national health sector to make it possible that we can do this particular assessment. Chairperson, I also think that the COVID-19 has taught us to do things differently. I would believe that our EPWP, CWPs, as well as CDWs, is a cohort or a contingent of human capital that is available to the government that can be used to be able to support the Department of Education in the schools with enhancing social distancing as well as hygiene. Our community development workers are supposed to be having the community databases, like Honorable Blanzana has raised, with regards to the needs of the community, where the poverty lines are, what are the challenges, who are the children who are not going to school as a result of maybe special needs and all those type of things. We can use this cohort that is available. But also I would like to know from the Commission, do you think that COVID-19 sent government and South Africa back to the drawing board with regards to the National Development Plan? Because as you would have realized, COVID-19 and its lockdown regulations has a bearing in the way in which we do work, but it has also taught us that there are certain things that we can accelerate and make it possible that it can be done quickly. The other one in last short, Chairperson, is the issue related to slide 15 and slide 17. No, slide 17 that talks to processing of payments that the Public Service Commission recommends that back office staff be allowed to go to work. I would also recommend that the Public Service Commission engage with the Ministry of Public Service with regard to this particular recommendation. Chairperson is worrying. Health and social development, key areas. Health performing at 49% last year and in the last financial year, and social development at 46%. COVID has also given us an indication. The Department of Social Development is not a department of grants. It is supposed to be focusing on issues of social development. We've got problems in our communities where we now have this high rate of unemployment. We've got neglected children. We've got neglected senior citizens. We've got people who are making money out of the most vulnerable, who are using these grants for their own needs and abusing the grantees. How do we make it possible that social workers are available to make it possible that they can look at social development as opposed to dispensing of grants? Because if we go to this, everything be made a grant, we run the risk of becoming a welfare state. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm very sorry.
Thank you. Honorable Chairman.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you for the presentation, ma'am. Chair, is also, I just also want to allude to the non-payment of invoices. And there, the PAC said that some of the factors that they have is maybe lack of internal controls, corruption and so forth. One of our colleagues, Chair, have alluded to maybe perhaps we should think and align ourselves to sort of make a proposal or a recommendation into the non-payment of small businesses and so forth. Because it's really ill discipline, Chair, for these five departments and transgressions to not pay invoices. Now, one will want to also understand to the five departments, which are those, if maybe the PSC can give us the five departments, sort of a spreadsheet, Chair, as to which companies were not paid and why were these payments not done and how far along were they outstanding. So that one can sort of also be tracking this non-payment in this department and try to sort of more progressive way in solving this non-payment. And then also, Chair, on the side of the consultants, fully agree with them that we consultants shouldn't be used in this time, and I fully want to sort of support the emotions on the consultants there. And then on the other part, Chair, on the procurement, what we also need to track is to say, for instance, is the PPE, because we still have instances where staff are fighting over PPE and saying they don't get PPE. So where does this PPE go that the departments are buying? So what is the role of this department to sort of monitor and track that all departments that are buying the PPE, that they are going to the extended purpose where it should be used? Because one wouldn't want to have a situation where departments are getting or ordering PPE and then it goes to some comrade next door and then they sell it back to the department yet again. It should be going to the extended purpose that it was asked for. And then also on the water tanks, pretty much the same thing, Chair, on the water tanks. What is the role of this department to also check that these water tanks do reach the communities, that these water tanks are not yet again at somebody's house and they are being filled right back to the departments yet again, but it was actually put for helping the communities. I think that is about it of mine, Chair, and then fully agreeing with the other colleagues what they have said and their proposals putting forward to the this department. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Tlangini. Honorable Joseph.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you to the Public Service Commission for the presentation. I think first point I would like to make, Chair, is that we've been talking about the Procurement Amendment Bill for quite a long time, and I think it caught us offside in this COVID-19. We need to play a role with other departments to speed up the Procurement Amendment Bill. I think that's important that we have that in place for going forward. My question is about the budget cut. I would like to know what is the core services. There is ongoing negotiations with the Minister of Finance. So I would like to know what is the public service, their view on this negotiations with the Minister of Finance on this budget cut that was proposed, not the budget allocation. I also would like to know with the wage bill, further to that, the wage bill, you are referring to entities and municipalities, so I would like to know what is your view on the national, or why is the national and provincial departments not included in your presentation? Because you only specifically refer to entities and municipalities on the wage bill. Then you also make reference to the leadership and management that you feel that there's a lack of leadership, that they do not follow procedures and policies. I would like to know what do you mean, because by now all departments with director generals from the top national to provinces should have management structures in place that gives leadership to the departments. I'd like to know what is your view on your comment there was a lack of leadership. And then, Chair, I would like just to close by asking the point about poor data skills, I think slide 20, I think. That you referred to on the human resources, that just no clear strategy for building the skills. I would like to know, do you have a set of skills that you define as critical, that is a lack that is critical, the type of skills that we need taking us forward, taking government forward, but particular that you referred to the fourth industrial revolution. We need to know what skills it is that we need. And in closing, I share the comments on building of the capable states and holding senior management to account for the accounting financial framework and financial accountability. I support that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Duhale.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to everybody. Let me join my colleagues in thanking the Public Service Commission for their presentation. One of the values of our Constitution is that people's needs must be responded to. So I'm not going to talk much because the Honorable Member Dipuo and Natasha touched on my question, but I would want to say the department or the commission is saying, when they talk about the payment of invoices, they're talking about the invoices which are older than 30 days. But we once made an oversight visit in Gauteng, and we found that the service providers were not paid for 3 years. So I'm happy that Honorable Dipuo put it nicely that they must tell us what is it that they are doing or they are going to do in order to see that this thing or this corruption or this non-payment of a service provider. Also like to say maybe they should make a thorough monitoring and check, because this thing is still continuing. People are doing their services and they are not getting paid. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Saruken.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if you can see me because my internet connection is very unstable. Chair, I've got two questions. The first is around the slide that showed 30-day payments. I want to know if that included provincial and local government or was it just national? And if so, can we get an indication as to what the picture for unpaid invoices beyond 30 days looks like at provincial and local government? And if the PSC has any suggestions as to how to get those spheres of government back on track in terms of 30-day payments. And then, Chair, my second question relates to the public service right now and potential reskilling as well. They made the point that we could train people who are non-essential to do all sorts of ancillary services that relate to essential services. But going forward, we're going to have all sorts of different skill shortages. And have they identified which areas we can potentially optimize bursary training for? Because we give a lot of bursaries to public servants, but often it's for fields that allow them to transition into the private sector and not add more value into the public sector. And have they identified and made recommendations as to which areas we should be channeling bursary expenditure on so that our public servants are able to remain in the public service, upskill themselves, and have a good career path going forward? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sarupen. Honorable Kaiso.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation made by Ms. Dimande. Let me go first to my question. I didn't get the issue which was raised on accumulated capped leave payment. I just want to get clearly what is the intention of bringing forth that area of accumulative leave or leave payments post 1994 or pre 1994, sorry, from the commissioner. Secondly, is on the, I think the disaster which has been brought about by COVID-19 has affected our operation in one way or another. So I want us to get an advice from the commissioner as to how should we go about doing our parliamentary oversight during this difficult time. We just want to get an advice. Thirdly, is an issue on which one is interested on, because she touched on the issue of budget adjustment, also bringing in some traditional practice within the public service, especially when it comes to the issue of cleaning services or cleaning environment because of the given situation presented by COVID-19, that there will be more cleaning that is needed to be done in our environment. But now the interesting question that I want to ask here is, don't you think that insourcing can play a cheaper role in as far as that process is concerned? And how far is that actually? Because I think cutting on, you know, outsourced services to private individuals has actually balanced the budget of the state. So I just want to get clear how far, or don't you think that the public service should then begin to fast track that process, because it's very much important. Now the other last two input is on the renewal of contracts of consultants. Have you ever done an audit on all audits of these consultant contracts which have been signed? Because I think they consume a lot of amount of budget from the state. Don't you think that it is better now that now those contracts, all of them, have to be audited and do away with all those that are really not necessary to be utilized at this stage because there is a budget constraint as you are facing. The issue of non-payments of, I want to agree with my colleague there, facing the downward, the economy facing the downward trend has posed a serious challenge to our small business, small medium enterprises. And I don't think there's any improvement and any serious consequence management that is taking place there, because I want to agree with Honorable Dipuo that it is now really has become a broken record. Can there be a very serious drastic measure in terms of consequent management in that respect? Otherwise, Treasury has to come in that space, to manage that space where there's no consequent management. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you so much, colleagues. Is there an honorable member that I left out? No. I don't think there's anybody who has joined us, but thank you very much. As you know, that all the minutes that were left from the honorable members, they come to the chair. I think one very important thing, Commissioner and your team, when you hear that most of these things which are raised here, it's not the first time that the honorable members are raising. They have been raising these issues, and we come back again. Hence, honorable members referring to the proverbial broken record. Now, just process suggestion as far as it is concerned. Can we, from now onwards, when we come back, we'll have a problem statement, most of them coming from the members and other problems that you yourselves have identified. The next column, want to see the interventions, what type of intervention that has been made. And then the last column, want to see the outcome, right? So that's very important. Secondly, all the issues raised by the honorable members, would like the PSC to come back and report on them and say in the same manner what has happened to them, so that we are not seen as just ticking boxes when we come to these meetings. Ourselves as public reps and yourselves as a PSC. Having said that, coming to my question one, I would like to know from your experience what type of cooperation you are getting from the department. I can't leave this one off, the payment of small businesses, especially black businesses, women businesses, and youth businesses. It's politically correct that we should do that. But again, as an attempt to try and grow the economy, it's an established fact that small businesses are the drivers of economic growth. We can get into the economics of it, but I don't think we need to do that. I think it's a truism that we all agree to, right? But that's how far it goes. And if we don't pay particular attention to the payment of small businesses, we'll never grow this economy. If we don't pay particular attention to the payment within 30 days of black businesses, of women businesses, of youth businesses, whatever we're saying will end up just being a rhetoric. So it's one area that would like the PSC and National Treasury to work very closely on and come back and report on what are you doing. I don't know how long we've been talking about this thing, but wherever you go, that's the type of a complaint that you get. As a public reps, we always say when we go on public platforms, we say the budget that we are presenting, it's a developmental budget and it's transformative. Based on the numbers, that's what we say, because it's a correct thing to do, both socially, politically, and economically, that we should do that. I don't need to bother you with the history of this country. But if one were to use an example of the coronavirus pandemic, most black businesses are just saying to us, and women, we are saying, when we see what is happening, we hear about these numbers, we hear about the stimulus of 500, billion rand, or if you like, of a trillion rand, but we know that we are just going to be spectators. Can we upfront so that we're seen to be proactive on this one, deal with this matter and ensure that perhaps some of the things that are seen as hurdles in crowding in the identified businesses, that we deal with them upfront so that we don't come back 12 months down the line and say, no, this didn't happen because of 1, 2, 3. What type of proactivity? Let's do that and make sure that the budget really does become transformative and does become a developmental. My experience, and I'm sure the experience of many honorable members, is that it's administrators who procure goods and services, not politicians. But unfortunately, whenever things go wrong, the politicians are the ones who must answer. And in most cases, we don't find the administrators having to answer for their actions. So one would say that becomes very problematic, and I would like to hear your views as to what can we do with that. Then there is a school of governance that we have always spoken about. My cardinal question there would be, do you think we're getting value for money from this school of governance? That's one. I'll tell you why. Year in, year out, we talk about underspending on projects, or we talk about overspending. Not just overspending, where you'll find that projects cost 2-3 times more than the initial budget of the project. So we have said from our side that that's indicative of poor project management skills. And we have before requested that, can that cost be offered there? Because everything, your life is project management. You are going to business as project management. But especially around these types of intervention, in service delivery, without proper project management, we'll always come back with this thing. So it is indicative of project management, it's indicative of poor contract management, or perhaps even a poor contract writing. So I'm just saying that the value of money from that school, can we really look at it, or we just, again, it's a question of going through the motions and ticking the boxes that we put so much through the school, but are we getting value from that school? I think this is in line with the type of value that we are getting from our academic institutions. And as you know, that there's so much money which goes there. But are we getting value from there? And what type of perhaps working together that we are having with those schools, with those academic institutions? Colleagues have spoken about slide 15 about underperformance of certain departments, and as well said, those are very critical departments to government. But again, what is lacking is, what are we doing? One, what led to the underperformance of those departments, and two, what are we doing to try to ensure that we don't get the recurrence of underperformance? Lastly, the using of consultants. If you go to many departments and SOCs, they've got very highly qualified, if I were to make, for instance, the question of lawyers. But you find that all what they do is to be channels. They come in, something comes in, it's simply legal opinion. You've got an advocate, you've got a senior attorney in the department. An opinion goes out, and all what the senior legal person in the institution will do is to come and present it to management, try to interpret something which has been written to us. But why it's one of the tools. Either we have them, or we say they are outsourcing this thing. I've got an experience where I wrote a simple letter to one institution about a year or two ago, and it was a simple answer: who did this? And the next thing I got is a letter which was referring me to a same of attorneys. A simple letter, just not just where you say, is it one or two? And the answer is two, but no, it goes out. And we should look at some of those things, because there's a lot of perhaps perceived corruption in some of those things. I think with those interventions from our side, I will ask a commissioner and Zimande and the team to respond. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much for you and honourable members for all the comments and the observations that have been made. Just to say that every time we appear before this committee, we learn ourselves as the commission on how best we should be supporting this committee with information that is useful to be able to do your oversight. And all the time we take these lessons to heart, and we try and sharpen the following inputs to try and be in line with your expectations. So even in this appearance, we've taken furious notes, many of whom we're going to be based on which we will be responding, but some of them, as you suggest, will possibly be better if we just pull this together and give the committee the information in the manner that you have proposed. But let me just address some of the issues that have been raised, if you allow me, Chairperson, and I will ask the DDG to take note of the areas of gaps and to fill in, especially in the areas that are arising specifically on the different slides. Perhaps, Chair, let me start at the end, just where you ended on some of the areas. You asked a question on the issue of consultants. Whenever we prepare to come to the committee, whether it's this one or other ones, we try very hard to stick to the areas of our mandate. And much as it looks repetitive to always reflect those slides of our constitutional mandate, we always bring that up because it is very important that because the issues of public administration and public service are wide and complex, we're mindful that we assist Parliament as close as possible in the areas of our mandate, but also, most importantly, in the areas where we have some kind of empirical evidence, because we've done serious oversight and we've also done research and work, and in some instances, even service delivery monitoring of sorts, so that we know that when we advise Parliament, it's something that we have done, and we're very, very quick also to point Parliament where we've not done any meaningful work in that area, and see if we can carry it on for future work. Just on the issue of using consultants, indeed, we've even done a research report, which we're very happy to share with the committee, out of which we provided guidelines on where and how to use consultants, because we're mindful of the fact that at no stage will we be able to keep all the requisite skills and knowledge that the public service requires to do its work at any given point in time. There will be instances where outside expertise will be needed. So we've put a set of guidelines such as is there anyone else? Is there capacity in the department to do that work? If there is, what in specific areas are you needing outside expertise? And how will you make sure that
Once you've used such expertise, there's some kind of skills transfer so that maybe in future there will be expertise in the department. So all those kinds of guidelines they are there. So I think that we've done quite considerable work in that area, but the issues that the honourable members have raised are actually quite on point. On the issue of training and the role of school of government as to whether we're getting value for money, honourable chair and honourable members, we just have to be honest. That has been in public administration as a whole. When I say public administration, I include even state-owned entities, all spheres of government. I can say without fear of contradiction, as a country, I think in the area of training, we've really fallen short. Now, the School of Government has had continual evolution, readjustment to be fit for purpose. But no matter in what state it would be, even when we feel that it is in the bad state, it would never supplement training that ought to happen in each and every government department at every sphere of government. That perhaps is our weakest point, that you have to have a very good school of government. You have to have very good programs in TVET colleges and universities, in NGO sector, private sector, everywhere. But in each government department, there has to be a training unit that takes those generic trainings from wherever to make sure that there is an understanding at management level, at coalface, that is responsive to the specific needs of that department and the mandate of that department. I can tell you now that we do not have. Now, just this major issue, which I call a national disgrace, this failure to pay SMMEs who have done work for government. At the heart of that failure is really failure of management, just to manage in any department. Management in various branches at the department as a whole, whom have we done work with in this department? Have they been paid and why? Just somebody managing and monitoring that happens and making sure that where there are funny excuses around, we don't have details for this company, we don't have this, somebody just asked a question. You said that at yesterday's meeting. Why is that still an issue now? Creating a dashboard that just monitors that. It is like, never mind the shameful corruption that's associated with it, where people demand a brown envelope in order to pay, which is equally shameful. Even that shame could really be reduced if management were doing what they are supposed to do. Just training fit per purpose public service managers who are able to crack the whip and monitor their teams to do their work as basic as that. I think we are failing this money to do that. So yes, the School of Government has got to be there, got to be up and running, but it can only do orientation, generic training, individual specific training has to happen at that level. Now, it's not just a problem of government. It's also largely, broadly, just a country difficulty, really. Just at the risk of exposing my age, Chairperson, we once had a situation where in the private sector, there were no qualified human resources managers in the private. There was once such a time. What did the private sector do? They recruited social workers from the system, took them to be their first cohort of human resource management practitioners, trained them themselves, but they came in with a basic social skill. That was the basis, even developing human resource management as a practice and as curricula in higher education institutions, followed the private sector that had already done that. I'm just saying, sometimes even as a country, we sit back and say, oh, we don't have such a skill, and we almost think that there will be somewhere where people will be trained and skilled for purposes of the skill that you need. So I think it's both a government challenge, it's a country challenge, it's everybody's challenge. Develop capacity at your own coalface to train all levels. So there we're falling short, and we have made concrete proposals to the School of Government in respect of what they can do. Chair, you've asked a question, do we have cooperation from government departments? It varies, but I think that we're getting there. Even as a commission, we've now clustered departments. Each commissioner has a responsibility for a province, for a cluster of government departments, and we work very well with government departments, but there will always be areas of challenge. And Honorable Kaiso has asked a question, how do we go about doing our oversight, and is this the way now to go? Honorable Kaiso, you are really touching on an issue that I am very passionate about. Even before COVID, I used to ask myself a question as I'm flying for a two-hour meeting to Cape Town to present. Could we have connected via Skype at that time before Teams so that I could give this information to the committee without having to sleep over, fly for 4,000 rand, take a car, go to Parliament? That doesn't mean that then that would be the only mode by any chance of interacting with Parliament. But I just think what we've learned from COVID-19 is some kind of agility and flexibility that says it's going to be only 2 hours. Should we be asking 6 people from the Public Service Commission to fly at great cost for this, or should we be connecting via Teams? Or it's going to be a workshop, we will need everybody under one roof. But I think some kind of agility that makes it possible for us to save the resources such that the bulk of it goes towards servicing our people rather than shuttling ourselves around just to talk to each other or give each other information for oversight. It would be much better going forward. Should we be insourcing some services? I think there are many services that we've taken for granted to just outsource willy-nilly, undercutting the capacity of government to deliver better. So rather than, yes, let's insource everything or let's outsource everything, I think we need to be asking questions, how on earth can we deliver short-term, medium-term, and long-term if we don't have this capacity in-house? So I think it's something that we ought to be really asking ourselves. Honorable Sura Penn says, as do all of these things we're talking about apply to national, provincial, and local government? Our mandate, unfortunately, is largely national and provincial. But because the Constitution requires all spheres of the public service to be in line with the constitutional values, we do make comments where we feel that things need to be done differently, even at local government level. The issue of bursaries and the way we give bursaries, these are supposed to be linked to performance, but sadly, sometimes individual officials are allowed to just say, oh, I want to go and do this course, I want to go. They were never meant to do that. They were meant to be aligned to a performance assessment and performance agreement, and therefore making sure that the officials go to do those courses that are in line with them giving capacity to be able to deliver. I will just raise through this quickly. Honorable Dlamini says, do you have the top five departments that transgress largely? Yes, because the 30-day payment issue is something that has been really on our radar. We can share that information with the committee gladly. What have we done about it? We've even summoned DGs and HODs that were dropping the ball. And thankfully, even the president now has said, I'm tired of hearing this. Let this be now a financial misconduct for any HOD and DG where these things are happening. We're still falling short in terms of making sure that at managerial processes level, people are kept to line, in line with that, but that's a product of another story. But we've said to the House as a whole, the Parliament and legislators, help us. Anyone who appears before you, no matter what they are coming to appear about, start there. Before you tell us your story, department so-and-so, tell us how are you doing with payment for within 30 days. So far, we've done those recommendations in relation to committees as well. The issue of the open tender system and how that has happened, to be honest, we've not done anywhere from that front. Maybe National Treasury would be better positioned to ask as to how that has evolved. Which government programs do we propose should be reconsidered? I think we really take high stakes in our day of monitoring and evaluating the way that we organize the
There's a feedback somewhere.
Oh, how is it now?
Okay.
Which program and we propose should be reconsidered? It's not
Commissioner, we need to wrap up in the next 7 minutes. So please can you you remember again? This is the constraint we're having about the new way of doing things.
It actually makes us very efficient, Chair. That's the last point I want to make. We try to stay as close as possible to saying perhaps what the committee in overseeing the budget should look at is not just areas of cutting in the head count, because that's our area of mandate. Perhaps you should even be looking at which areas in the way we do business should we be cutting. That's why we lifted that one of health risk management, because we've actually drilled down and investigated that area, and we even have a report that we can share with the committee in that respect. Let me just quickly just allow the DGG to close one a gap or two, mindful of the fact that we will pull all of the comments together in line with the guidance of the chair and give the committee a report that is outlined in the manner that the chairperson outlined. Sorry, DDG, can you just fill in a gap or two without taking more than the time that we've been given? Thank you very much, chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. Just a few inputs. We will also make available a report that we did around the 30-day payment, which begins to really unearth some of the issues that were alluded by committee members, including what is it that the Public Service Commission has done over the years around this issue. There's a report that we also did around building a capable, career-oriented and professional public service. We'll also issue that report to the Portfolio Committee. It begins to address issues of human resources, issues of training, issues of delineating the politics from the appointment of officials, the issues that we're dealing with currently around the establishment of the head of the public service and the recommendations made by the Public Service Commission. Just to go back quickly on the questions that have been asked, just a few of them. The question asked by Honorable Lenzana, on what is it that the what cuts can be made or possible errors can be made. I think we have alluded to quite a number of them. The issue of performance bonus that we can look into as an area where if we succeed and we agree that this shouldn't be paid for this financial year, just as a saving. The issue of the compensation of employees at local level and also at the state-owned enterprises. If you look at a salary, just to make an example, a salary of a DG in a department, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't go there, a salary of a DG in a department and also a salary of an executive as in the form of CEO or COO in our public entities, there is a huge, huge difference. So we are saying that whilst we're looking at cutting in the public service, we also should also consider cutting in those areas as well. The cost of doing business, I think Commissioner Nzimande has also alluded to that one. On the issues raised by Honorable Sheikh, he alluded to the issue of the capacity and the skill. I think it links to what Commissioner Nzimande has responded to. So the skill here is not necessarily about the people. If you look at the workforce, we have got the people, we have got the qualifications. On average, you find a public servant having three qualifications. But the question here is whether those qualifications are helping us and translating into doing things that we can do, but also respond in times of crisis and be able to be agile and provide the services. We have seen a little bit of forced coordination and collaboration within government with the COVID, where we have worked with national, provincial and local level, but it was mostly forced, as you would see that in some instances, we were exposed a little bit as government, where you would find one province responding much earlier, one department pronouncing what they are going to do, and other departments are still a little bit behind. So all those issues, they talk to the institutional capacity that we have in government to deliver services, but also to respond when we have got a crisis. I think the issue of 30-day payment, Honorable Mashapa, Commissioner, has alluded to that, will give a report. I'm just going through Honorable Peters on 30-day payment. We've spoken to that. We are talking to Minister of Public Service and Administration on quite a number of issues, including the recommendations that we make on daily basis that have to do with policy issues around the public service. So the issue of the risk assessors, again, is an issue on the table that we have raised with the MPS and will continue to raise as well. But we thought in light of the crisis that we have now, we really need to share that also with the committee. On the NDP, the NDP is a vision for 2030. The PSC does not necessarily see the NDP targets being changed. But what we will change is the MTSF and the MTEF and how we actually navigate and take advantage of this opportunity that has been created by the COVID to respond as quick as possible so that we are able to meet those NDP targets of ensuring that people have got are equal in the manner that we provide the services, issues of employment. It's going to be difficult, obviously, with this unprecedented pandemic, but the NDP as such is for 2030, so the NDP targets are very much unlikely to be amended. But how we navigate and get to the NDP is probably an issue. The issue of the back of piece, I think that has been alluded to, that officials that are in back office, not only to pay suppliers, just to mention a little bit, one of the things that we've been dealing with as the Public Service Commission is officials whose retirement date was at the end of March. and we have picked up on several occasions nationally and provincially that when the president announced on the lockdown, certain departments shut down and they went away. And we had to engage with those departments to say, but these people have to be paid their money. We have to process their papers and ensure that they are paid. If we don't do that, again, they become a burden on the economy in terms of them being provided, whereas these people have worked their money and they should be paid. I just want to go back to Honorable Kaiso on the issue of the accumulated and kept leave. So basically what we were saying there is that up until 2000 in July, government made a determination to say you take all your leave days for a cycle. So if for 2019-20 you have got leave days, all of these leave days must be taken. For 2020 you have got leave days, just to be updated. You take all those leave days by the end of June for 2019-2020. Previously, that did not happen. So what happened is that people accumulated leave over the years. So year in, year out, they'll be accumulating leave days. When they retire, then they retire with huge leave days that comes at the cost of government. So we're saying people who have been in the system before that determination was made, obviously they're sitting with huge number of leave days. So when they leave now, they have to be paid that leave days. So it's a retrospective matter, but going forward, we have put measures in place as government. It's just that those people have to be paid, those who had accumulated their leave days. In the interest of time, I think I would love to leave it at that.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Commissioner Nzimande and the team DDG. I think we are much wiser after your presentation. Obviously, there are areas that were pointed at that we would like you to look into as the way of trying to enrich the relationship and the value between and amongst our ourselves. But thank you very much. Perhaps there are some documents that DDG said will be DDG Matenjo said will be presenting to the committee. Please do so. But thank you so much. we are fine. You don't need to leave. We just have got one or two things to dispose of. Honourable members, there is a draft program that has been distributed to us. Obviously, the question of the coronavirus has impacted on the draft program that we had before we close. But mainly, just to underline this one, that the program is trying to ensure that we are able to deal with the appropriation bill, right? The target date for us is the 9th of June, where the committee must consider its report to allow the process to continue. So we do have a draft report in front of us, and as you can see, it also allows us to interact amongst others with institutions which support us. We've just dealt with the PSC at the moment. We're still going to meet PBO. We'll meet FSC tomorrow. We're meeting HSRC. But most importantly, our constitution is very strong on this one in allowing public participation in the appropriation bill. So the program also set us that one in. And I'm sure there's one or two institutions that will also be calling to try and enrich our process. So that's the program, that's the draft program which is put in front of us, honorable members. And as you can see, things are very fluid at the moment. We can see us coming back and trying to find one or two things. But we think for now, this is the program which is going to guide us. Is there any violent opposition to the program? Can we go on the basis of this program?
We may proceed, Chair, from Dennis Joseph. We may proceed.
From State Imam, no problem, Chair. We can go ahead.
Okay. The program is being adopted by the committee for the second term. We also needed to deal with the minutes, but I want us to postpone the minutes to the next meeting so that we don't interfere with other committees from start. And I think this brings us to the end of the meeting. Once more, thank you everyone. Thank you honourable members for your very good input. Thank you Commissioner and your team.
Thank you.
The media. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
You.
Thank you, Mr. again.
Bye.